Welcome in, kingly brothers and heroic husbands from around the planet. Welcome to this episode of the Be the Husband She Brags About podcast. In today's episode, we welcome in Jedi Azuma. With a decade of experience in men's leadership and empowerment, Jedi is the founder and CEO of the Rising Man Movement. As a guide, mentor, and coach, Jedi has impacted the lives of thousands of men on a mission to initiate an entire generation of men into power and purpose-driven service. Despite his many roles in men's work, Jedi considers his most important jobs to be father and husband. Jedi Azuma, brother, it's an honor and privilege to have you on the show, man. Thanks for coming in.
Grateful to be here. This is a first for me. I don't think I've ever been on an Irish podcast, at least Irish based. So glad to be here, man. Happy to talk to the husbands out there.
Cool. Thanks, man. Jedi, one of the big things that's really jumping out at me that really drew me to just when the penny dropped inside my nervous system, like I really need to speak with Jedi Azuma, is your full unapologetic it's full frontal in your mission to initiate a generation of men. You know, I've been around men's work for 3 or 4 years, and I've become really aware of, you know, initiation, rites of passage. I think more conceptually, I've went through, you know, certain initiations in coach training, definitely overcoming my marriage breakdown breakthrough experience, and like that was definitely a rite of passage and initiation. But I'd love to draw on your wisdom as to, you know, what initiation means to you. And I suppose my first curiosity is, why was initiation so important to you to put it like front and center, that was a core part of your mission to initiate a generation of men?
Well, it's a great question. And it actually ties right back to marriage. I guess to just give a little bit of context, because I'm sure most people listening don't know who I am. I grew up outside of New York City in the New Jersey suburbs. For those international folks, that's right across the river. And had a pretty ordinary suburban middle class upbringing. I played sports. I was good in school, good in sports, and just felt like there was a huge void. I didn't know what it was, but I felt like there was something that I didn't get as a young person, as a boy on this journey to become a man. Knew I wanted to become a man, knew that I wanted to belong to a, what in my mind was like a warrior party of men. Like I instinctually, I always wanted to be a part of a team of men, which I think is why I was so drawn to sports. But you know, that's an imperfect version of what men and being in our best version of ourselves can be. So in my early 20s, mid-20s, I started to go on my own spiritual path of discovery and self-realization. And right around the time that I met my wife, I encountered both a different version of men's work than I'd experienced. Because I've been involved in men's organizations since I was 17. So for half my life, I've been involved. But I really didn't get the depth of mentorship that I was looking for until I was 25. At the same time, I encountered a community that was offering wilderness rites of passage, 4-day solo fasting outdoors by yourself, no food, in the elements, no distractions. And I just really felt like so many signs in my life had pointed me in that direction. And I hadn't known exactly what it was all along. I'd been deeply fascinated by and drawn to indigenous native culture, especially Native American culture, living here in the States. And when I was about to marry my wife, our wedding was in August of 2014. I went out and fasted 1 month before that. So I had this rite of passage. I had this initiatory experience and was able to weave that into the narrative of getting myself ready to be a husband. And very soon after, be a father, because we knew we wanted to start a family very soon after that. So it was in a number of ways, it had a lot of layers. There was a layer to it of me really demonstrating and identifying, declaring my passage from boyhood to manhood once and for all. There was also leaving behind all the stuff that wasn't going to serve me to be the husband and father that I wanted to be. So I put a lot of meaning in that ceremony, and going out there for those 4 days by myself, it revealed to me a lot of who I wanted to be, entering into these new commitments and new responsibilities in my life. So that's really how it all came together for me, was 50% fortune, just getting to meet the right people at the right time, and 50% instincts and following my gut that led me 3,000 miles across the country to meet my wife and find this community of men who are doing this deep, deep, powerful version of men's work that most people don't get access to, and a rite of passage community that were literally all within 5 minutes of each other.
Yeah, that's a beautiful, succinct, but really revelatory introduction into, you know, how you've come to be the man you are. Well, the beginning chapter for sure. A curiosity I have, Jetty, is you say that, like, you know, there was the early days of men's work, like you entered into it like when you were 17, but it wasn't until that experience when you were 25 that it's like there was a real deepening into what, like, you know, radically deep and profound men's work can bring to you. Might be difficult to really just sort of set them apart, but what was the difference between them? What was the essential nourishment that you were getting from the guys, you know, that group from 25 years old onwards? What was allowing it go as profound as it was?
The way I tell this part of my story is that from the age of 18 to 25, I was, again, both really fortunate and also very much led by my instincts to encounter some wonderful people. I think a big part of it was I always valued honesty ever since I was young. I always valued honesty. I always valued what we call just being real, right? Like the real factor, that real quality that you could just tell. You don't have to be a coach. You don't have to be a seasoned men's work practitioner to be able to detect BS from people. And so I always just valued being in spaces where I felt like that meter was very low. So when I first got to college or university, I think, as you guys say, I was a part of a multicultural program. I'm biracial, and I was very drawn to being in circles with other mixed race and minority ethnically. How do I want to say that? Being around other minority students is what I'll say. And there was an organization on campus called Brothers for Brothers. And it was mostly minority men, but really it was open to anybody. And we got together on Friday evenings. There was a barber who would do haircuts. And then we would talk about what was going on campus, if anyone was having a hard time. And it was, for me, it was really the first time I was ever in a space where males were speaking honestly about their experience. There was tears in that room. There was laughter in that room. There was a level of honesty that was above the norm. Right. I won't say that we were doing some deep processing and trauma release work, because that really wasn't the case. It was above our pay grade. And the difference then was we were following our instincts. We were students. So anywhere from age 18 to 22. And for the really until I became 25 and encountered this circle of men that I mentioned earlier in my intro, I was around other people, men and women, but mostly males when we were going into these deep and vulnerable spaces. But we were all the same age. We had no idea what we were doing. We were just following our instincts and trying to get as much out of life as we could. So I often say it was the blind leading the blind. We weren't completely directionless, but we really didn't know what we were doing. We were kind of creating something based on our intuition. When I sat in circle with these men I'm mentioning here, the guys who I sat with and still sit with, I'm still meeting with these guys every 2 weeks for 10 years. This was the first time I sat down and there were men who were twice my age. The first meeting I ever had with them, actually, eight of them, I sat down, I'm in man's backyard. There's eight other guys there that all are really my dad's age. And I'm 25 years old. I've been traveling on the road. I've just been having one self-discovery after another. And all of a sudden we sit down and we start doing this thing they call men's team. And I'm looking around and all of a sudden we're going into a process with a man and it gets heated after 5 minutes. And I thought these guys were going to go to blows with each other. I mean, I thought, oh, this is where a scrap goes down. I got to be ready for whatever's going to happen. And within a few minutes after that, they're both in tears, embracing each other. I was like, whoa, what just happened? And the man who invited me to that circle on the ride home, he was like, so what did you think? And I was like, I had a million questions. Like, what was happening there? How did that happen? I thought they were going to punch you. And he's just laughing just because he knew how different that was for me as a 25-year-old man to experience. So The difference really was just embodiment, experience, and practice, and a deep determination and commitment from the men to go wherever they needed to go. They would have punched each other in the face if they had to, but they also would just embrace each other in tears if they needed to as well. So the difference was the spectrum that the men in that container were capable of covering. And I can't really describe it any better than that. It's an experiential thing.
Yeah, I'm tapping into the difference from my own experience. I've experienced multiple different layers of men's groups, and some have been a bit more of the, yeah, we share, but we don't process. Just the guy shares, you don't challenge, next share. And it's a bit more maybe what you've experienced like in your college days. And there's a value to it, but definitely when I started experiencing the others, I remember in my men's coach training, when there was a 4-day intensive retreat coming up, they started talking about, okay, there's going to be fucking body slams going down. I was like, what? That doesn't seem like safe language, but it's like, it just was like sort of along that essence of like the commitment to go wherever you need to go. Mm-hmm. Like no censorship of anything, but radically safe at the same time. And I just didn't know, my nervous system did not know that could be a simultaneous experience, going wherever you need to go. And it's also radically safe, that there's boundaries, but like it gets heated and messy. And so I absolutely resonate with that part.
Can I say one thing about that?
Really? Yeah. Oh, please do.
So here's the thing. I'm also, a lot of people don't know this about me, but I have a doctorate in physical therapy. That was my first career. So I studied the body and the nervous system.
I'll just geek out and nerd out in this one. My college training is as a physiotherapist. So it's like, well, yeah, that's the Irish. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, so then you'll understand this as a scientist yourself, at least part of your background, that our biology, our genetics on a genetic level is trained and hardwired for violence and protection. It's something that our ancestors have done for way longer than we can even fathom. And so to live in quote unquote civilized society where we're trying to rehabilitate and decondition ourselves from violence and protection, it requires a lot. So we're talking about living in a more civilized society where using our hands and our fists to settle disputes is not exactly acceptable anymore, right? At least in most places in the world, right? Maybe not everywhere, but we're moving in that direction, right? More civilized means less fisticuffs. And at the same time, we're reintroducing practices of men being in spaces together where we're activating and pushing up against those edges, those violent strings and cords that we have wired into our bodies so that men can remember that that's still in us. We can't deny that that's a part of us. In fact, I think the reason why there's such a high degree of domestic violence, why there's such a high level of suicides, why there's such a high level of mass shootings, especially here in the United States, is because men have been led to think that we're not violent by nature. And we've been steered away from learning how to experience and encounter our own violence. Now, I'm not proposing that we start opening up Thunderdome again and we just let everybody go ripshod and have at it. I'm talking about safe exploration of the limits of our violence as men. The limits of our physicality, of our energy, of our anger. We need to know our emotions in order to be able to command them. I can't control my emotions in the same way that there's no way I can control someone else's emotions, but if I'm familiar with them and I know how to be with them, and then I know how to be with the emotions of everyone else around me, it's a much safer environment. The metaphor I like to think of is a handgun, right? Guns in general, gun safety, right? And they teach this. I'm not a gun professional by any means, but they teach that you create a safer situation by knowing how to handle a firearm than never touching one and never experiencing that at all. And I came from the belief that guns are bad. Let's get them out of here. Let's destroy them. Nobody touch them. Nobody even look at them. And now I'm thinking, wow, there's so much wisdom in that. It's more safe for us and for everyone to know how to be with the most dangerous thing in the room. And the most dangerous thing in the room is not a weapon. The most dangerous thing in the room is someone who does not has not been in full contact with their emotions and doesn't know what will happen when they get pushed over the edge and become headlines.
Yeah. You're bringing up, I love Jordan Peterson's sort of talks on this, you know, like the most dangerous man in society is the guy that knows he's completely violent, but knows how to control it. He points to the likes of Jocko Willink, you know, ex-Navy SEAL commander, that dude can kill any man in the room, like pretty much any room he's going to set foot into on the planet, you know, hand to hand. He knows how to take a dude down. And yet he's impeccably safe. He's completely trustworthy because he has that shadow side. He isn't afraid to use it. He knows how to use it, but he's in total control of it. This is the part of where I just love, you went in the tangent. I was like, okay, my plan, you've just burned up my plan, Jetty, but I'm going with it. My curiosity when you're speaking to, you know, this part of our ancestral inheritance that every man listening in has, that whether or not at this point he's wanting to go, yeah, okay, I'm comfortable with that, but we have that. So if we sort of accept that as like, okay, every man has that inheritance, it's in his DNA. You mentioned some of the sort of like the extreme versions, you know, of somebody committing suicide or mass shootings. And it's almost very easy for, you know, the vast majority, I'm sort of assuming and hoping like the majority, to just go, oh, well, you know, subconsciously, that's extreme. That's not me. However, with your years of experience in men's work, Jetty, what are the signs, or call them like symptoms, of an unhealthy or an unconscious relationship with this violence that's more characteristic of like your regular guy in the street, the guy that doesn't have extreme shit going down? He hasn't bet the shit out of his wife. He doesn't have like, he doesn't go down to the bar and is constantly on a Friday and Saturday night beating seven shades of shit out of people, or, you know, it's not so extreme. But if you go into, you know, like the majority of guys listening in, they're good guys, they're well-intentioned guys. Yeah, they have their ups and their downs, but they're showing up with their family, they're loving, well-intentioned men, and they try to fit in with society. What are the signs that they mightn't be aware of that could sort of trigger their awareness of, shit, I might actually have, you know, some digging deeper to, there might be something more here than I was aware before listening into Jetty talk today. What in your experience are some of those, the most common patterns or signs?
Well, the problem is that it often seems insidious. What I mentioned before about men becoming headlines, it's, I don't know how it is over there for you guys in Ireland, but there's often stories out here. I know I've heard of stories from Australia about this guy who just all of a sudden one day went off and killed himself and his whole family. Like it's unsettling, obviously, but it's also a bit bewildering. Like, why? What would drive a man to do that? And you read into the article a little bit, right? At least myself, I get curious. Like, what would make someone do that? And again, not knowing the full story in context, because how could you ever really? But you start to see these quotes that the media catch of neighbors, because it's never family, right? No one ever wants to talk about what's going on. The neighbors saying, he was such a nice guy. He seemed like such a pleasant person. It's not always the story, but there's many of these examples. And so that's got me curious over there. Why does this keep happening to these quote unquote nice guys who just blow a gasket one day? So I believe that it's less visible to the outside world because as men, we've trained ourselves and been trained and conditioned to contain, to hold in. And that's not to say that containment isn't a valuable thing. We'll come back to that. But as in general, we've been taught, keep your emotions in, put on your mask, you know, just don't raise your voice. Don't let that energy out. Just hold it all in. And a human being is only capable of holding it all in and keeping it all together for so long. So you asked me about signs and symptoms, right? There's deep, deep pathology in holding in emotional stress and strain. I mean, right? It's like they say that it's the number one killer for men is stress over the course of a lifetime. And it literally requires energy to hold in energy. Just think about having a wild animal that you were trying to keep from running around crazy in your house. If you were holding that wild animal, you'd be exerting energy to hold that animal and their energy back. So mm-hmm. just imagine now how that metaphor is inside of a man's own body, inside of his own experience, requires a lot of energy. Then there's the inevitable slips. I blow a gasket and raise my voice and yell at my wife or get physical with my children. There's ways that I've shown up in my relationship with my wife and in relationship with my kids as their father that I never would have imagined before I became a husband or a father. I never thought I would be the dad who yells at his kids ever, because I hadn't really experienced that when I was a kid. I never thought that I would have the impulse to physically restrain my son when he's having a temper tantrum, but here I am, admitting that as a husband and a father, or especially as a father, that I've used physical restraint to manage my son and his emotions. And I mean, just the amount of shame that I've had about that. And then we start going a little bit deeper, right? Let's talk about the dark thoughts that I don't even generate myself, but just pass through my mind when my son is freaking out and I haven't slept in weeks. Like what the mind does to try and convince me to do violence to my son just to get him to stop crying and losing his stuff, those are the things that we need to normalize in speaking about. Having thoughts is one thing. Acting on them, letting that become a pattern of behavior, that's where it becomes problematic. But I think all men there at home, if they've got all their stuff together, they're probably not even listening to this podcast, because they're like, I'm already a well-balanced, emotionally balanced, you know, my life is good. They're probably not listening to a podcast about how to be a great husband or father.
Right. Or they might just be listening in, because I'm constantly talking about how fucked up I am and have been. That they're just like, yeah, I like listening to this Mark dude. He's a fucking train wreck. Okay, cool. I listened in. I feel better about myself.
I would wager to say, though, from all of the guys that I've spoken to, the more likely scenario is that there's guys out there who haven't been able to admit these things because it's deeply shameful. In fact, there's fear of implications. Like what would happen to me? Are people going to call child protective services if they find out that I held my kid down while he was having a temper tantrum? There's real life implications. And systemically, I don't think that we have taken into consideration the real human nature, the real nature of humans and a human experience. And it's just not safe to explore the full spectrum of who we are. And that's why coming all the way back around, men's work is so important, because we can create those spaces. We can create those safe containers where that energy gets to be explored in a way where we don't do harm to ourselves or others, but we can push the limits of that because we're in a space with other men. Physically, it's more safe. Emotionally, it's more safe for us to do that in certain spaces. So we can wash off the war paint when we go home to our families.
I love that. I'm actually loving just your treading in of metaphor. It's like, I'm just dropping in to everything. So I'm taking a lot from that, just as my teacher cap is there going, I'm just loving that. So yeah, I want to acknowledge you for that. The washing off of the war paints as you go home is like, yeah, fuck yeah. Cause I suppose we do want to show up with that clean front as much as possible. Like, you know, parenting sort of, I suppose it's like, I know I got a great amount from doing Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu for a number of years, where I could put the war paint on, fucking like slam guys down as tidy as untidy, you know. It was like, it was just that full red hot aggressive, but with the absolute, you know, structure and container that every guy was as safe as possible. And then come home, I got a real embodied kick from it to express that, and then I was more settled when I go home. So I definitely enjoyed that bit. Jetty, it might be a superficial intro into my deep curiosity about the 4-day initiatory rite of passage. And like, I unapologetically just flag guys up, because you have, I think it's the Compass 4-day intensive, you know, if guys are interested in this conversation, they can check you out afterwards. I have this simple, probably superficial curiosity, but maybe it'll go deeper with the answer. Beyond what seems superficial immediately. Why, you've mentioned several times there, fasting as part of the rite of passage. I've read that before. beyond some intermittent fasting, and I've done like, a day's fasting just because of a general detox and I haven't read much into it. But why is fasting such an integral part of initiations and rites of passage?
Yeah, it's a great question, man. I'm happy to speak more about it. You know, my understanding of things from what I've learned from my teachers so far is that regardless of where your ethnic background comes from, we all have evidence of land-based rites of passage that involves some form of solo time alone in the wilderness with fasting from any combination of the essential life resources like food, water, sleep, shelter, etc. And so when I'm speaking with people, because this is a deeply spiritual experience, you know, I don't ever call it a program. It's really ceremony is the way I hold it, the way we hold it at Rising Man too. But when I try to explain it just in functional terms for people who don't have that same reference or connection, it's creating conditions for clarity. So we're not only fasting from food, we're fasting from human contact. You're alone. You're in the wilderness by yourself in 4 days. You're fasting from technology because we're in remote regions where you couldn't get a cell signal if you wanted one. We're fasting from all the other comforts and distractions of life. I mean, I won't even begin, but just, right? Just like phones, right? I'm holding up my phone right here. Just everything that we have available to us at all times, global connection. We're fasting from every other ounce of noise and volume that can distract us from listening to what's happening within ourselves. So on a purely functional level, forget about the rite of passage part, forget about the spiritual transformational part of it. Just having 4 days. When have you ever in your life created that much space for yourself, removed from that many layers of comfort and normalcy from your life to just tune in to that inner frequency? Most people have never had that experience. And that, you know, everyone gets focused in on the fasting part because most people on this planet, especially if you live in first world privilege, you haven't gone more than a day without eating unless it was by accident or extreme circumstance. All right. So 4 days without eating is a highly unusual experience for many people on this planet. Not all, obviously. And then spending 4 days by yourself where you don't see or hear another human for that length of time, all of a sudden you start stacking up these variables and realize, wow, this is a highly unique experience. What is going to happen to me under these conditions? So that's purely the functional side of it. Now, if we want to open up to more of the spiritual transformational journey that this is, it's marking a transformation in a person's life. So if I think of my life as a whole story, the book of Jedi, right? From birth until death, the life I've been living up until now, presently, is one chapter of that story. Every time we introduce a rite of passage ceremony, whether it's vision fasting like we do, the way I've been describing, or any number of other intentional rites of passage ceremonies, it's like you're putting the closing paragraph into the chapter you've been living up until now and turning the page to begin a completely new one. So it's a death and a rebirth, the rite of passages. It's the death of a current identity and the rebirth of a new one. So it's truly transformational in that sense. When we put that layer of meaning and purpose and intention on what we're doing, we're really reintroducing one way, one tradition for how we help our boys mature into full adulthood. We're marking that. And here's the initiation piece, right? Because a rite of passage can happen completely alone, right? I can get lost in the wilderness for 10 days by myself as a teenager and have an experience that might be a rite of passage for me, right? I'm different. I'm altered coming out of that. And initiation requires community. Nobody can initiate themselves. Even if we have that drive or that instinct to go and backpack through Europe or to go and spend a few days out in the wilderness by myself, an initiation requires a community. And this is where the community's responsibility is to support and witness that individual going off to their death and returning as a new version of themselves. And that's where that level and degree of accountability starts to come in. So there's a lot more layers to this journey. I know with, you know, our attention spans and just websites and marketing and podcasts, I can only say so much about what an experience like this is for someone who's never had it, but it truly is a transformational life experience that somebody elects to do as a way of marking or drawing a line saying, I am going to be different from this day forward. And here is how you can expect me to be.
As you're speaking to that, I think it was Joseph Campbell. There can be no resurrection without a crucifixion. It's just, if I bring myself back like to the first 12 years in marriage, you know, guys here listening in regularly, they'll know. They're probably like shouting at home going, Mark, stop telling us about the 12 years. But to bring you up to speed, like 12 years, me, first 12 years of marriage, you know, it's the last 3-4 years were 15 and a half years together. But the first 12 years, Jetty, was just a, I don't know how to even describe it. You know, I'm just trying to find words as you describe what an initiation is, you know, this death of an old identity and like a transition, like this clean transition into like a new phase, a new chapter. When I look back now, I'm just seeing this blob, this really shitty, I don't know, it's like a canvas, you know, what has just every single color fucked at it, that there's, and sometimes that can be beautiful, but I'm just seeing like there's no definition. I had no clarity and I had no idea at all who the fuck I was. And I never took that time. And it's like so many times, I suppose, as a result, feeling into it, like Matilda, my queen, like, and my girls, they were receiving, that identity was coming out and communicating through me. But there were so many times when I was at like the far side of like Matilda was in tears in front of me because this shit just came out of my mouth or came out through my body, and the same with the girls. And I really see it like when you're saying about this initiation, it's like all of that old undefined story and identity that I had never clarified was just spewing out through me. So I don't know, I'm just, my intuition, my nervous system is giving me those words. I want to touch base if that makes any sense to you, but I'm really feeling like there's such a yearning in me from your words. It's like, oh fuck yeah, like 4 days solo time. I'm just geeking out. My mind is already spinning like how and when can I do this. I haven't done that in my adult life. I haven't done that in my childhood. I've done tons of meditation, you know, men's work, retreat work, coach training, but that raw 4-day fuck off, disconnect from everything, the umbilical cord, you know, snatched from society, I haven't done, man. And I can intuitively feel just how important that is. Does anything that I'm after saying make any sense to you at all? I've rambled out uncontrollably, just blurted out what was coming true. So,
well, I'm laughing to myself because one of the great things we've been able to do is start bringing more fathers out, fathers who have sons and daughters, but especially fathers who have sons. And a lot of times when we're taking dads out who have young children, they're the ones who are coming back saying, man, can I go do 4 more days? It was so nice to have some time to myself. They look at it almost as not a vacation, but just the time away. Right. I mean, especially, I know we're talking about husbands here, but assuming that there's some fathers listening as well, that just how out of contact we get with our own sense of purpose and direction. You seem like a man who's gone deep into all the different teachers and people who laid the foundation for men's work. So I'm sure you're familiar with David Data and Way of the Superior Man. I think it's either chapter 7 or 11. I got to go back because I always guess on this, but one of those early chapters, he says that a man must make his purpose more important than his partner or his family. And the first time I heard that, I was like, what the heck is he talking about? I thought it was the opposite. I thought a man was supposed to do everything in consideration of his family and his partner. But about 6 years after I first picked it up, I reread that and I understood. I got it. I was like, oh, I see now. I understand that if I lose contact with my purpose or my mission, and it's not to say that I neglect my family. Obviously, it's including them under the umbrella of my vision, but it's not sacrificing that true north direction that I have in my body. That's really what he's saying. If I compromise that, then the only possible outcome from a man who is not actively engaged with his purpose and his mission in life is resentment. I'm either going to resent everything externally that I perceive as interference, getting in the way of me and my mission, or I'm going to resent myself because I see myself as the one who sold it out. But either way, there's resentment there. And we could go all the way down the rabbit hole talking about which part of this is genetic, which part of it is biological. Do women experience the same degree of pursuit of passion as men do? And if not, why? But I just go by what I've seen with my own eyes and heard with my own ears. And I know that men who aren't clear on a direction in their life, they're missing something. It's evident, it's obvious, and it's painful. I remember how much pain I experienced when I was 23, 24, 25 years old. And I literally couldn't imagine my life beyond the age of 26. It's like, there's no way I can keep doing my life this way for 20, 30, 40 years, maybe. No way. But if not that, then what? And until I answered that question, every day I woke up felt like one of the worst days of my life because I had no idea what I was doing anything for. I was waking up, I was going to work, I was making good money, and I had a great community of friends. I had everything that I needed. I had an apartment in Queens in one of the greatest cities in the world. And all I wanted to do was escape my life. So I know my experience, and I know that that's just one version of the same story I've heard men tell over and over and over for the last 10 years. So there's some wisdom to it. And just because we can't chop it up and put it under a microscope doesn't mean it's real. Not real.
Yeah, I love that. I just jotted it down super quick. There's so much spiritual poetry in that and how you pose it. But, you know, if you've no North Star purpose recognized and integrated into your life, that just equals resentment. You know, it's like just getting black and white. And I have observed that, like, definitely in my own life since I've went all in, you know, the last number of years, and like the last 12 months, really cranking up with the podcast, mission, purpose. I know the pain of that firsthand, but it has startled me. You know, guys reach out, one-on-one coaching, you know, oh, you know, I want to be the husband she brags about. It's like, oh, and it's all about marriage, and it's all about the dysfunction, and it's all about the arguments, and oh, she, like, what she's saying about me, and like, I would say like 95% of the time, if not 100% of the time, it has nothing to do with the marriage. The guy is actually, when you go deep, deep, deep into it, he's feeling hollow inside. What he has been doing the last 10 years, 20 years, some guys like 40 years, incredible careers. And yet it's just admitting, okay, that just feels really hollow. It brought me joy maybe in the beginning, but at this point in my life, I'm feeling hollow. So I like it's so, so important to recognize. If some guys are listening in, and I'm imagining quite a few, because like you, observing and hearing so many guys around the world, it's quite omnipresent and all pervasive. If a man is on his way to work, he's listening to the podcast, is listening to Jetty saying it, there's some part of his nervous system just coming to a fresh, alive awareness of, oh, fuck, I don't have that North Star. Oh, shit, you know, yeah, maybe that's why I'm feeling resentful, you know, all the time. If there's this fresh awareness coming up, Jetty, and that guy was across the table from you now, you're having a cup of coffee together, and the guy goes, looks you in the eye really sincerely, goes, Jetty, what the fuck now, man? You know, what's my next step? I'm curious what words of wisdom might you have for that guy?
Well, I've come to appreciate, maybe it's just as I'm getting older, not being so drastic or dramatic with big decisions. So I think making decisions from a sober and calm mind is as much as we possibly can is important. So if I had a man sitting across the table from me and he's in this sort of existential pulling his hair out, what the hell am I doing experience, I would just encourage him first to just take a breath, just look around and remind your body and your nervous system for a moment that you're not in any immediate danger. You know, yes, what you're feeling is real. Yes, what you're experiencing, you must do something about it. but just look around for a moment and just settle yourself, just regulate for a moment. And I would probably help him do that first. And once we got to a more of a sober state, I would say, this is great news. This is great news. Let's not look at this as a bad thing, right? We're so quick to put negativity on it and our fear and our ego. The system, the survival system of the ego is so quick to cast a negative light on what we're experiencing when these things come up. And so I would just try to at least balance the narrative with, maybe this is the best news in the world. Because if today is the day that you realize that you're not fully aligned with a purpose that motivates you, that drives you, that fills you up and gives you vital life force energy every day, then great. At least you can see it now. At least it's like when you go to the doctor because you've had a stomach ache for months and you go and you find out you have a parasite. Well, that sucks. Parasites are not fun. I've never had one myself, but from what I hear, it sucks. But at least you know what it is. There's some of that relief and like, oh, all right, well, even if it's something more serious than a parasite, at least I know what it is. Now I can start to do something about it. Because as men, we're solution driven, we're solution based in our masculine energy. The next thing I would say is, it's your responsibility now to make this a priority, to pursue your mission, to pursue what your purpose is in this life. And if you don't know exactly what that is, great. Let's figure out ways that you can connect with that. And a lot of times I find that men, they don't want to do this for themselves, especially if they're already husbands, if they're already fathers, and they're deep down the path of building a family and a lifestyle. And they're like, I don't even want to jeopardize shaking that up. What I would say to that person is, well, don't think of you as doing this for yourself. You owe it to your family, either the family that you already have or the family that you'll have someday, to be a man who's fully clear on his purpose. Because of what I said earlier about resentment, it is the only outcome. I'm convinced of it. I don't care how good you are at containing your emotions or stuffing it down or making it about everybody else. At the end of the day, we're human. And if there's a part of you that's not satisfied with your life, it's going to generate resentment externally, internally, or both. And that's something that needs to be addressed. It's your responsibility. So you owe it to everyone around you. If you won't do it for yourself, then at least do it for everyone around you. Because if you're bringing a wife and and children along on a journey and you're leading them somewhere, but you have no idea where you're going yourself, you're driving them aimlessly in the desert. And you wouldn't do that. You wouldn't invite a whole family of yours to jump in the car with you on this amazing adventure you're going on and then say, I don't know where the hell we're going. I don't even know where to start. Wouldn't engender a lot of confidence in the people around you. So I usually tell guys, and I know we're talking to husbands here, but before you even get married, every man should at least know who he is and what his life is about. Because how could you ever stand at the altar and promise yourself, commit your life, make vows about who you promise to be for that person without knowing who you are? Mm-hmm. I don't know how a man does it. And I think that's why there's such a high divorce rate, is because they said yes to the wrong person, or they said yes before they were ready. And they did so much damage in this resentment spiral that was irreparable, even if it was the right partner. So for those guys out there who may already be married, it's not to say that you can't get more clear on what your purpose is and have that and weave that into the life you've already created. You might find that your purpose has been right at home with you all along. I've had some guys go out and say, I went out there and realized that the most important thing in my life is my wife and my children. That's a beautiful purpose. Not everybody has to go out there and influence a million people. But if you're not clear on exactly what that is and you're feeling some of that resentment every single day, then you at least have to do yourself and the people around you the service of getting curious about why that is.
I love the answer, because it's both soft, you know, take the time, get into your body. There's no rush. It's not another thing to do on your to-do list today. But, you know, we talk here all the time that it's about extreme ownership. Like, that's the way to transform your marriage, but it's the way to transform your life. But there's a real core foundation in what you're saying. It is your responsibility. And if you can't do it for you, like, do it for your family. There's a grief that comes up for me. I've been working through it, so it's not live right now, but for me, for years, I was holding against Matilda and the girls. subconsciously, constantly. It's like fucking doing all this shit for them, all the money, Matilda's horses. I like, there just was a big part of my shadow. It was like just this resentful son of a bitch that had it with them, and the amount of time I was giving them and I was getting nothing. So yeah, it's really, really not worth it. I've been a number of years holding space for especially our eldest daughter. She got the brunt of that, you know, that resentment. It was like Matilda was away working, I just fly off the handle. Never physically, thankfully, but fuck me, emotionally and psychologically, I was not a safe man to be around. It was really around that resentment piece. I was resenting being there all day, and then all of a sudden I'd snap, you know, nice guy, nice guy, nice guy, snap. So yeah, with a heart and a half, I really have firsthand lived through that. I think it's very important to say to the guys listening in, it's like, live through it and still with the same beautiful woman. And my kids are like feeling amazing now, but it's been like 3 years of holding space for her going into full on dissociation, full on like total shit fits where she was inaccessible, but it was just sitting with her for like whatever it took, 40 minutes, cool. An hour and a half, cool. You know, cancel the appointment. I'm here with Anya. But if you can avoid that, you know, it's better to, you know, get control of the fire before it's a total blazing bush fire. Jetty, there's so much of my impulse to continue talking with you. I feel like I'm only like getting into the juice of it. Within the time we have available today, let's maybe circle back down the horizon. I'd love to have you back in the distant future to pick your brains even further, brother. But I've been deeply inspired by you, as I imagine many guys listening in on the topic of initiation, but just tapping into your energy and wisdom and what you're doing with guys. The guys that are inspired to know more about you, where can they reach you online?
Yeah, well, first, thanks for having me on here, man. You know, just send the invitation along. I'd be happy to come back and be here anytime that I can. Anybody who's interested in everything I spoke about today, the way that we approach men's work, the ceremonies and rites of passage that we have in conjunction with that, we have in-person and online presence out there. So anybody who wants to know more about that can go to risingman.org or even just start following us on Instagram at risingmanmovement. That's where you'll get a better sense of our style and our way of how we create leaders in the world. If you want to follow me and get in touch with me, you can hit me up at Jetty Azuma on Instagram, jettyazuma@gmail.com. Email is a good way to get reach me. At Jetty Azuma on Telegram, that's really the best place. If you want to hit me up directly, send me a message there because I do like interacting with people. Fortunately, Rising Man is growing and getting so big that my team of men are now out there in the world helping me to initiate a generation of men. And I'm focusing on initiating the leaders who are initiating the men. But we have a wonderful community, international, multi-generational community of men out there. So if you're interested and want to know more, come check us out.
Jetty, I just want to acknowledge you. You're an inspiration for me because, man, I'm catching up. With my movement and just the way you're modeling it with your movement, with, you know, initiating your leaders, et cetera, and going global, deeply inspiring and inspiring for me, but inspiring for every guy that's, you know, a part of the Be the Husband She Brags By movement. So thank you for doing the work and being a leading North Star for me to look on and witness and be inspired by. Thanks so much for coming on, man.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me. And thank you for doing your hard work, too. I've been doing a podcast for a long time myself, and I know what it takes to do that. It's a labor of love. And so just want to send you some love and appreciation and acknowledgement for the work that you're doing, especially the work behind the scenes, because nobody sees all the work that everybody does behind the scenes for this and to be a leader of men. So good on you.
Receiving that with an open heart, Jetty. Thank you, sir. Guys, that's been another amazing conversation here with Jetty today. Definitely follow up afterwards and check him out and his movement, the amazing stuff he's doing in the world. The gauntlet is down as always. You know, the challenge is there in the implementation, whatever the insights that have come up as Jetty has been speaking, any wisdom bombs that have jumped out at you. It's it's one thing to listen, but it's another thing to lock in on one or two of those points and find a creative next courageous action to engage with and implement in your life. That's where the major transformation comes. But for today, thank you so much. I'm expressing appreciation and love for you all listening in and the deep work you're doing, showing up on the daily basis. Finishing off with the mantra of our movement, better husbands today, better world tomorrow. Go have an amazing, beautiful, kingly day. And before you go, kingly brothers, I'm so happy to let you know that Heroic Husbands Men's Circles waiting list is now live. Online meetings supporting you up level to hero husband status. Go from fearing your best will never be good enough to becoming the competent and confident husband she brags about. Save years of needless guesswork and confidence eroding disconnection. Click on the link in the podcast description to take your first simple step to becoming the marriage transforming hero of your relationship. Check it out now.